Welcome to Africa, Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. Today we turn to West Africa, where we feature Amalion, a multilingual publisher in Dakar, Senegal, that has a vision of Pan-Africanism uniting through books. But first, Kevin Eze, a Nigerian writer who also lives in Dakar, Senegal. We spoke to him about his latest projects. You're a published novelist. Your book, The Peacekeeper's Wife, came out last year with Amalion Publishing. And this year, you're in the new Commonwealth anthology of creative nonfiction called Safe House. First of all, is it hard to straddle the fiction and nonfiction world?
For a writer, it's natural in the sense that a writer should aim to write in all genres, because the writing life encompasses everything about the human experience, the joys and the sorrows, the laughter, even the hatred. And in the African context, we live in such a fictitious continent that we naturally turn to nonfiction as to explain the hunger, the thirst for information, and for why we are so left behind in the party of the world.
Your piece in the Safe House anthology is called Eating Bitter, and it's about the Chinese merchant community in Dakar, where you live. Now, your piece flows as you get to know Yun, who is a young merchant. But was it difficult to break into this community to see how things functioned?
It was difficult because the Chinese generally are secretive in their mode of operation. And so I, first of all, came in as a client. And secondly, I expressed the idea to do some research. I think that Yun had known that I was going to do a piece for an anthology that would be sold at the world level. Perhaps he wouldn't even have opened up in the first place. But we became friends, and I tried as much as possible to be pleasant, and he opened up. He didn't tell me everything. For example, he told me it was eating better that the word revealed, but eventually it was found out to be eating bitter. She also said a ton of phrase that was meant to perhaps lead me astray. So, yes, Chinese are generally not very open to people getting to know what they are doing. That's exactly why they work mostly at night, so that in Africa, Africans wouldn't have to get the transfer of technology and the secrets to their success.
You are not only skilled, definitely maneuvering between fiction and nonfiction, but you are also, like Yun, the Chinese merchant, living in Senegal, but from another, albeit African, community. I mean, how does this affect your writing, being a non-Senegalese man in Senegal?
I think it proves it. Like many writers, they will say that distance enables you to grasp reality better. And I think that's perfect. You know, we live in an idyllic world. The Russian novelist Leo Tolstoy once commented that all happy families resemble each other. And so distance enables me to discover what makes each family unhappy, unquote, in its own unique way. Not exactly the way I would have done it if I were to be in Nigeria. But as a Nigerian living in Senegal, I'm able to appreciate Nigeria's differences, but also to see ways in which Senegal differs from Nigeria.
But, I mean, in your book, The Peacekeeper's Wife, you write about a world of women and of longing and of separation. I mean, and you're not a woman and you're not a peacekeeper's wife. I mean, what was your inspiration for this? How did this story come about?
I wanted to give greater voice to women. There's been a lot of clatter as to how women could play greater roles in the African society. And I'm not the first to do this. Going back to the fact that I live in Senegal, I remember that Senegal's famous cineast, Ousmane Sembène, one of his films portrays the same kind of situation where the men struggle, are beaten, and cannot defend their rights against the French colonial rule. They surrender their rights on harvest, which is an abomination to surrender your harvest in Africa. They danced one last time, and then in the village arena, they disappeared. They fled. And in the final analysis, women came in. They packed up their spears. They began their own dance. And gradually, the men returned to the village square. So I think women have this special way of approaching life that men generally do not. And it's just the same in my own Igbo culture. And it seems to be similar in all African cultures, that women are the ones who bring food to the table, they are the ones who cater for family. Because of that, they have an eye on the society, which men usually tend to ignore. So why not being a woman? I'm glad I had a woman who helped me to read the draft in the first place and who really corrected and saying that, hey, here, this is not really the way we feel. But if you put it this way, it will sound better. I was really grateful for that. but I was also able to give them more voice and greater voice as to the role we expect them to play in Africa. And I'm grateful that the woman is now the president of Liberia. The woman is chosen by FIFA to become executive secretary recently, a Senegalese for that matter. And so, yeah, gradually, woman is added to national criminal court, even though that's actually a contentious and controversial still. But gradually, I think we'll get there.
Up next, Souleymane Adebowale, the founder and head of Amalien Publishing, based in Dakar, Senegal, a multilingual literature and nonfiction house that has big aims. We asked Adebowale to describe Amalien in his own words.
It was founded to be a kind of a bridge between academic publishing and the general trade and the general public. We hope we can be able to disseminate scholarly works, but for a larger group of people rather than just academics. We will have to look beyond traditional concept of knowledge or traditional sources of knowledge like university texts and journals and scientific journals and all that view. So the topic also comes into being. We also publish literature. We hope we can be able to cover those topics as much as possible in our work as well.
You publish in French and English. How do you see language as influencing discussion on the continent?
If we want to broaden knowledge in Africa, we will have to look at the languages. And we will have to look at, sadly, the language of academia right now is English, French, Portuguese, and Arabic mainly. And it's essential that when we are dealing with Africa, or we are dealing with countries from Africa, and for us to get a better grasp, we cannot restrict ourselves to the phony boundaries of Francophone, Anglophone, Lusophone, Arabophone. If you don't work across the languages, we'll end up losing out interesting stuff. So many things that we don't get access to when we work within one language source alone. Discussion on Africa is multilingual. It's not easy to do. Translation costs a lot of money. The network that you need to disseminate the work, they are not common across board. But if you don't set out to do it, it will never happen. Because what happens is that there will be a bunch of literature that Francophone scholars will be citing without citing what is available in the Anglophone, Arabophone, or vice versa. That doesn't give a broader picture of what we're discussing, of what we're trying to solve, some with our search for knowledge as well.
You're publishing a number of things this year, but can you give us a highlight of a book that you are publishing that you think will make a difference?
We've got a book that we're going to release this year called The Culture Conspiracy and Development Planning in Africa. It's an edited collection made up of scholars and practitioners. I'm going to go into a bit of cliche and stereotype because that is what is circulating out there right now. At times you could hear stuff like, okay, how come certain things, certain policies and certain solutions do not work in Africa to resolve maybe economic policies or maybe health policies or what have you? And at times some people would go into the, oh, you know, this essentialist argument of it must be something in the water. You know what you say? You know, it must be because Africans have a peculiar culture and that's what makes things not to work, or that's what makes things work in a certain way. And this book, these contributions, are debating that, are discussing that. They are challenging those questions. They are asking questions. Is culture so important? Is it there? Does it exist? Does it affect development planning in Africa? And development planning is a strong focus for most governments and for everybody. But do we take into account what's the weight of culture in that discussion? And how does it affect it? Or how does it impede it? How does it move it forward? Basically, your contributions are looking at that thing. And the book will be available in English and in French.
That's all the time we have today. Thanks for listening to Africa, Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. Until next time.